Welcome to Inside Vancouver Opera. My name is Ashley Daniel Foote, the manager of partnerships and engagement, and today we are talking about Black History Month and honoring Black History Month with a conversation between two of Canada's most exemplary Black sopranos. Brampton-born and Philadelphia-based Othali Graham has made a name for herself with incredible performances in the title roles of Turandot and Aida and an unwavering commitment to the Wagnerian repertoire. She's also performed in concert across the world with luminaries such as Bryn Terfel and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Raised in the Greater Toronto area, soprano Yonelle Sills is currently a member of Vancouver Opera's Yolanda M. Ferris Young Artist Program. Named by CBC Music as one of Canada's 30 Hot Classical Musicians Under 30 in 2020, other highlights of Yonelle's exciting career include a tour across Canada as Mimi in La Boheme with Against the Grain Theatre, a residency at the Banff Centre, and work with the Glenn Gould School in Toronto. Vancouver Opera was delighted to work with both of these incredible artists in our recent performance of Cavalleria Rusticana in concert. And I asked Othali Graham what it was like to perform with another incredible Black artist.
I was really excited to do this role in particular. You know, doing something in concert is tricky because, you know, of course, we're, you know, doing the COVID distancing thing and all of that. But doing something in concert is tricky because, you know, relating to each other is more difficult, and not, you have to delve into the character, you know, on your own. We had a director, but, you know, you have to sort of come with your own ideas and be prepared as you would with a stage production, but you only have, you know, your lighted circle to show all of the different parts of the character and, you know, the arc of your story. But I was so happy to see Yonelle at rehearsal and to see, you know, just to see a young, you know, Black soprano. I mean, it's so thrilling. And I have to say, in saying that, because I want people to understand that, you know, when I travel, you know, and I go to other countries, you know, when I see another Black person in the orchestra, I mean, we immediately rush over to each other. You know, we're so happy to, you know, be in the realm of each other in this art form. You know, if I was in, you know, Mexico at Bellas Artes or in Monterrey, Mexico as well, in different places, you know, when I sang with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, you know, I did Elijah with Bryn Terfel there. And, you know, even the one Black person who was in the choir, you know, we ran over to each other just, hi, what are you doing here? Oh my goodness. But especially when you go to Europe or go to other countries, you know, to see that you're always, so when I saw Yonelle, I was, you know, so happy. And, you know, the first things out of your mouth, oh, you know, what are you doing? Where do you study? What have you done? And how can I help you? Yeah. You know, the idea, you know, I always want to do everything humanly possible to help and, you know, to pave the way or show the way for, you know, the younger generation.
Yonelle Sills also had a similar reaction when meeting Othali for the first time.
I definitely will echo that. Like, I was very excited when Vancouver Opera announced that Othali was going to be singing Santuzza. And I had never heard her sing live, but I had heard about her and I knew who she was. And I was always like excited about the work that she was doing. And also to see like a dramatic soprano who's also Black, who I've had no experience of seeing that. So when we started and then like our first interaction was a hug and I felt like I literally melted in Othali's arms. I was like, ah, you know, it was just so like sweet to have that, like kind of like also see another Black person. It's like that safety. And then it was also that like instant kind of like familial and sister kind of connection. And then her also like saying, yeah, if you need anything, I will like definitely like help you out in any way. And she's definitely been very true to that. And like, you know, it's been a good support and a good kind of like, sister figure to be like, come on, like, let's go. You got this. Like, stop worrying so much. Just do the damn thing, you know? And yeah, sometimes when you kind of feel like you're alone, you feel like, oh, I don't know, like you kind of doubting yourself. And that's like kind of how I started in university. I was like, oh, like, I don't know what I'm really doing. And that's definitely kind of like stuck with me even as I've grown. So it was good to have that conversation, like to talk with Athalie throughout the time there and to kind of like, you know, absorb some of her confidence and strength and be like, you know what, let's just do this damn thing. And just, you know, like she's saying, just not even rejection, but just like putting yourself out there. Cause yeah, I definitely had some hesitancy. I had some and still do in working through that hesitancy of like seeing my value and worth as a singer and seeing like, oh, I guess I just have to wait until like I'm perfect before I put myself out there, which is a lie, and just kind of just do it and take the risks and just to move forward. So it was amazing to work with Athalie and to just to see her like confident energy and who she is as a person and as an artist too.
I asked Athalie Graham to take us back to the moment she realized that opera was something that she wanted to do.
I was born in Brampton, but then we moved to Etobicoke. And throughout school, I mean, it's a really famous story, but my teacher in middle school, Mrs. Wallace, she wore this beautiful black mink coat. And I used to always, you know, look at it and want to touch it and, you know, stuff like that. But she said to me that, you know, she had studied singing and that, you know, she had been an opera singer. And she said, oh, if you're an opera singer, you can get a coat like this. And I said, oh, that's it. Whatever opera is, that's what I'm doing. But she was the one to recognize that I had this, you know, big, unwieldy instrument. And I couldn't sing in music class with the other kids because you would just hear me and I would always want to sing. So she told my parents, you know, during, you know, parent-teacher conference that, you know, they should have opera around and introduce me to opera. And Leontine Price came to Toronto and my dad got tickets for my mother and myself. And I went and it just absolutely, amazing. I mean, again, representation matters, you know, to see a woman who looked like me, you know, do that. I mean, it was just absolutely overwhelming. And I knew nothing about concert protocol. So as soon as she was finished, not knowing that she would then do encores, you know, I brought my little flowers, you know, to give to her. And I rushed up to the stage and I was like, Miss Price, Miss Price. And she looked down and she came forward and took the flowers and she said, oh, it's not quite over yet. And I said, oh, and she said, is there something that you wanted me to sing? And the audience, you know, was laughing. And I said,
oh, wow.
You know, oh, if you would sing, you know, the butterfly, you know, toot, toot, the big death, which is the only thing I knew because it was so dramatically exciting. And she went off and, you know, with her pianist came back and I stood right there when she sang it.
Yonel talked about discovering her own voice through her family.
I would say the first voice that I identified with was my mom. My mom has a soprano voice and she would sing at church all the time. And it was definitely like very like operatic, like influence. I don't, it was just kind of her natural way of singing. And yeah, so I would always look at her and then she noticed in me that I had a love for singing or a natural ability for singing. But I was also really nervous and kind of like, I never liked to sing in front of people. So that was, my grandmother always was pushing me to sing and I would always like deny and run away. But eventually my mom put me in a children's choir, which I also did not like. I was like kind of late to the game, it felt like. I joined when I was around 12, so like fast forward, and I was like already 5'7" at that point as a 12-year-old, so tall. And I was like joining later to the choir, and all of my colleagues, since I was like in the second level, there's like 5 levels of the choir. So I was singing with like 7-year-olds and I was 12, and they were all better musicians than me, and I just felt like a loser. Really, I just felt like a loser, and I didn't feel like I was like good enough. But eventually I started to get better and I started to enjoy it and I started to make some friends. So I'd say that was definitely like the start of my love for classical music. But in that choir, I never saw myself as a solo singer or I thought I was like good enough to sing solos or to stand alone and to do that. And then I was trying to figure out what I wanted to study in university. And I had some knowledge of classical music from this choir. So I said, okay, I like singing. I like working with students. I guess I'll like do some teaching and I'll do music. And then I went to York University. And then I studied with Stephanie Bogle as my voice teacher. And she is a Canadian soprano. And she obviously could hear the potential in my voice or the qualities of my voice that could be useful in opera. And that was like the beginning. And I had no idea really even still when I was at York that I was going to continue to keep growing as a singer.
Our conversation then delved into the experiences of racism that both Othley and Yonell had experienced as their careers as opera singers unfolded in both Canada and around the world.
When I was in Sweden singing, I shouldn't even say the country, it's so terrible, but I was doing a recital and, you know, I had worked so hard to learn some Sibelius songs in the language. And I was staying at this beautiful hotel that was on the water. So, you know, the one thing that singers grapple with, as you know, is, you know, time difference and that sort of thing. And everyone knows that I drink vats of espresso. So I carry my espresso maker everywhere I go for different, you know, different adapters for different countries. And I decided in the morning, you know, the hotel was wonderful and they put me in this huge suite and the actual concert was in the museum, which was on the property. And, you know, there's a huge poster of me in the hotel and posters everywhere and, you know, Othley Graham. I decided to take my espresso, long story short, down to the water in the morning. So I grabbed a towel and I was in a sundress and, you know, sitting with my feet in the water and, you know, trying to wake up knowing I would have rehearsals every day. And a woman said to me, you know, oh, you know, good morning. I said, oh, good morning. You know, so excited I'm here. And she, you know, I put my little towel on my lap and drinking my espresso. And she said, oh, we would like some of those as well. And I said, I'm thinking, the espresso? What is she, you know, what is she talking about? And she said, oh, fresh towels. We would also like fresh towels.
Wow.
So for most of, funny how she didn't, you know, confuse any of the white guests as a hotel maid. So for a lot of, and I look, you know, the way I do now with no makeup on and, but still, you know, being seen in public in an elegant and refined way. Not that that should matter. I, in the press conference for the concert, you know, with all the different translators, you know, someone translating in Swedish and English and, you know, they said, oh, Miss Graham, you know, how are you finding your time here so far? And I said, well, this morning I was mistaken for the hotel maid. And you heard blah, 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 in, you know, them translating. And then all of a sudden you heard, oh!
Yeah, yeah.
So that was, you know, and whether you are a domestic or you're an opera singer, it shouldn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was my first, you know, why did that happen? And of course I knew why. But coming from Canada, I have to say, and Yonell, you can speak to this as well. I have to say that there is definitely racism in Canada. That's not a question. I find that it's not as blatant as it is in the United States. I find that it's not as, you know, as if someone just removed the white hood. You know, our racism is a little more polite or a little more, you know, furtive, but it's definitely still there. And we know it's there. I haven't had any blatant racism in Canada. I'm certain that, you know, there are people who, you know, don't like me, whether you don't like my voice, you know, there are always people who don't like you. They don't like your voice. They don't like the way you sing. They don't like what you do. That's fine. But blatant racism in Canada? No. Blatant racism in the United States? Sure. Sure. You know, I've never been to my face called the N-word. Ever. Never. But I get a lot of, you know, you must not be from here. You know, oh, why would you say that? Oh, well, because, you know, you're so articulate. The articulate thing I get, or you're not like them, you're not like the others, that sort of thing. Now, of course, my language, you know, our English, this is our Canadian English. But believe me, there is certainly some Philadelphia English in my vernacular now.
My own experiences, it's also been pretty subtle, and it's been like a lot of like microaggressions. And a lot of them, like for myself, the way that I've dealt with it is kind of like, you just like put your head down, you just kind of like brush it off or like laugh it off. And in my schooling and in my career, I've definitely made it like a point to have colleagues who are black or have friends who are black. And then anytime I see them, it's like, you can at least have a debrief with people. But there have been like definitely strange instances. Like one time I was in a school and I was rehearsing, and it was, you know, an opera school. And I was just like looking at all these like beautiful pictures of past productions. And then in one of the pictures, there's a man in blackface. And then like, thankfully, one of my other colleagues was a black person. I like called him over. I was like, do you see this? Like, is this just me? And then we kind of just were like, well, you know, you just kind of back away slowly, just like mind your business and just like try to like make it through the next day. So like these like weird kind of like microaggressions that maybe sometimes I like haven't noticed because I chose not to, because I just didn't have the time or the energy to deal with it. But for myself, I would say it's been a lot of like stuff with my hair. I have like curly hair. I don't have straight hair. And that's been something that's kind of like given me anxiety. I've had conversations with my mom. I did a concert in 2020, and I was doing this piece it's called Portrait of a Queen by Carlos Simon, an American composer. And I was like, ooh, like in my mind, like a queen, and it's like specifically a black queen. Like a black queen has like long like braids and like, you know, is wearing something royal. And I was telling my mom, like, I made my appointment, I'm gonna have long passion twists. And then my mom looked at me like really concerned. And she's like, are they gonna be okay with that? And then I was like, well, they're gonna have to be okay with it. Because she, like, as my mom, I guess, like growing up in Canada or like immigrating to Canada, she's like learned how to like, you know, keep herself safe. So like coming into a very white space, look with like long, like very black passion twists, she felt like maybe they being like the white audience members, the white like orchestra members, you know, may not be comfortable with it. But I was like, well, too bad.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you.
So
good for you.
Yeah. It's definitely been a lot of like microaggressions and
microaggressions is definitely the yeah, the definitely way. Microaggression. That's the Canadian way. But like I have
Canadian
to say,
subtlety,
I mean,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. But I have to say that, you know, there, I didn't have a lot of race discussions more than I had, you know, in my household. You know, there's that immigrant mentality that is, you know, ingrained in us, that immigrant parents will ingrain in their children, which is, you know, to keep your head down and do the work, but always the reminder, which is still true in our business, that as a, you know, as a black person, as a black singer, you know, your parents always said you have to work twice as hard to get half as far. Mm-hmm. And that's always the thing. So we strive harder, and we're just, you know, we're just used to it. We work harder, we strive harder, we're used to, you know, making do with a lot less, and don't have, you know, that sense of entitlement that, you know, some others might.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, do you find, I mean, I, now that I'm here in the United States, I mean, I like to know, you know, through the beauty of Facebook or Instagram, you know, as people always friend you, you know, oh, I heard you sing, whatever. But I like to see. I like my racist to be in a sheet, because then I see you, I know exactly what it's going to be, and I can cut you out of my life immediately, or I know how you're going to deal with me. You know what I mean? I can be more safe. Physically safe. You know, I have a black son. I have to be, you know, I prefer to know. I don't like furtive, microaggressive racism. I need to know. I prefer to know upfront how you feel. Which, you know, is not what we do in polite society. Well, in Canada.
and opera is, of course, the ultimate polite society.
Isn't it just...
I want to talk about that very nature of that. It's something I've been pushing since I started at Vancouver Opera. And that's that we're in a moment of really interrogating the very nature of how our art form is going to survive for financial reasons, for cultural, for systemic racism. When you look at the nature of the roles and the stories that make up opera, when you're picking an opera, when you're looking at the history of colonialism that is often on rampant display in works, you know, Madame Butterfly comes to mind, do issues of representation and race cross your mind when you're considering which roles you're going to take or not take, or is it not even possible to make those decisions at this point?
I am an actress who is an opera singer, and representation matters. The easiest way for us to stop, you know, dealing with race in opera, hire more Black singers for any role that fits their voice. Period. Yeah, put it on a t-shirt. I've said nothing. Yeah. Every time anyone talks about race and asks me about what should we do? Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We're going to hire more freaking Black opera singers to sing their repertoire.
Yeah.
Hire Authalie Graham to sing Isolde. Sing it. Hire her to sing Electra. Hire her to sing Brunhilde.
Yeah.
Why should it be that she is the first Black singer in history to sing Electra, or to sing, I think there might have been one other in Germany, or to sing Isolde? Why is that?
Yeah.
You know, that is it. Now, I separate Black singers from singers of color. I am a Black singer. But hire a Chinese soprano to sing Turandot. Yes, great. But at the same time, they don't just want to sing Butterfly.
Yeah.
You know, hire a singer, an Asian singer, an Indian singer, a Hispanic singer to sing whatever the hell fits their voice and make a conscious effort to do so. That's all we need. We didn't need your blackout for George Floyd to show solidarity. I don't need you to patronize me by putting a Black singer, you know, on your website from a production that you did 10 years ago because it's mm-hmm. Black History Month yeah. and you mm-hmm. want to show that you're representing Black people. Don't do that. We see you. We know what you're doing. Don't do that. You know, I don't need you to mount an entire Black opera. All I need you to do, I'd prefer you didn't constantly mount Porgy and Bess because you know it's a moneymaker. Mm-hmm. Mount, I mean, Porgy and Bess is a great show, but mount Electra, where Electra and her sister are both Black. Or where Electra is Black and her sister is Italian. I could have an Italian sister. It's so simple. It's not, I don't want pandering. You know, Black history is American history. There is no, you know, Black history is American history, period.
Hiring more Black singers for, like, I guess my perspective of when I was in university and I was like learning more about the industry, something I noticed was that specifically in Canada, I was like, I would only ever see one Black singer, which was like great to have that representation. But then it like also subconsciously, I was like, okay, so there can only be one. You know, they're
gonna... is Canada. One, but if you look through the history of companies, let me not call those companies by name, but we all know they know who they are and we know who they are, that you either have never had a Black singer or you've had one Black singer. Now, you can say, okay, well, we're not hiring, let's say, Authalie Graham. We're not hiring Authalie Graham because we heard her on this day and she was terrible. Or we heard her on this day and we don't think that she is our standard. Or we don't like her voice. We don't like what she does. Fine. You know, the voice is subjective. There are just the reality of the voice. Some people are just not going to like you. And then if there's a little, I find, and that's the one thing that I also want to bring up, is that I find that for Black singers especially, again, the twice as good to get half as far, there are, we all know that there are people where you're sitting in the audience and you go, how is this possible that you got this job? And but because there are people who are more forgiving of a white singer who misses every single high note, or, you know, a white singer who wants to transpose something, but a black singer, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's not even, you know, we heard that this person is not good, so that's it. How can you have one black singer working in Canada? How is that even possible?
Yeah.
I find that when I sing, that there are a lot of black audience members that come. You know, the publicity goes out and it's like, oh, okay, we need to support her. We need to be there for her. We need to support her. And that's what we as a community always do. Singers, you know, we'll fly. When there's a colleague making a debut that we want to support, we will, you know, the Met, when we have colleagues that make debuts, black singers show up. Some of us with children can't always show up as much as we would like to, but, you know, we do that. We show up, but the community also shows up. And, you know, there's, again, talking about growing your base, growing the community, there is a lot of money in our communities. And they will become patrons, they will become board members, but they don't see that opera companies are reaching out to our communities, so they don't.
You know, companies are always talking about like wanting to grow their audiences, wanting to engage in communities that are not usually coming to the opera, but it can be as simple as hiring a black singer and then someone being inspired to go. For example, I went to the Push Festival in Vancouver, and I went because the poster was a black man.
I think you'll agree this is a powerful conversation that touches on many, many urgent areas. And, you know, speaking as a mixed race Canadian, African Canadian, I was inspired and concerned and worried, but also hopeful that we are entering a new moment in which we can elevate black art and hire more black singers. To that end, I asked Yonel Sills to share a list of wonderful black singers that we can give a spotlight to. And as we wrap up our episode today, here's Yonel talking about some incredible, incredible artists that are hard at work right now.
As a young singer, I often felt alone because I did not see any other singers of color or black singers, especially. Also, as I've grown in my craft, I've also heard the excuse that there are not enough black trained classical singers in Canada for companies to put on their stages. As I've grown in my community in classical music, I've seen that is a lie. And I'm so excited to share with you the names of my colleagues and people that I admire who are talented, skilled, and capable to do those things. Charlotte Siegel, Corin Thomas-Smith, Khadija Embo, Andrew Adridge, Ineza Mugisha, Catherine Daniel, Katie McCullough, Susan Taffet, Monica Mazanka, Queen Hezumu Diango, Chantel Nurse, and I am sure there are many other talented Canadian opera singers who are black that I have not met and do not know. So I know that this is a short list.
We've also posted links to all of these singers' Instagrams and official websites at vancouveropera.ca or right here in the show notes on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for joining us as we honor Black History Month today on Inside Vancouver Opera. And just a reminder to stay connected with us at vancouveropera.ca as we look ahead to our next opera, HMS Pinafore, from April 30th to May 8th. I'll see you at the opera.